Game On.
Game On.
2FM.
And you're very welcome to Game On here on 2FM. It's Hugh Cal with you until 8 o'clock. Tonight we're talking GAA in a couple of minutes' time. Problems for Mayo and Donegal. Mark Langdon on European football ahead of the Champions League tonight. Paul Griffin will tell us about the problems for Italian rugby at the moment, of course, in the week leading up to that crucial World Cup match against Ireland on Sunday. And we have golf to come as well. We'd love to hear from you. 51552 is our text number. You can tweet at GameOn2FM. And Gary Murphy and Conor Mortimer are with me in studio. Both very welcome, lads.
Thank you.
Yeah, let's just talk about Jim McGuinness's article today in the Irish Times, if you don't mind, because maybe this isn't a world that the average Joe or Josephine would know anything about, and that is the issue of a holiday after a team's campaign. And the essence of Jim's piece today is that Donegal were promised a holiday at the end of their campaign last season, all fully paid for and all that kind of stuff. Not everyone got to go on it, and Jim McGuinness says now that the people that didn't get to go should be entitled to a voucher for the holiday for the work that they put in, and they haven't got that yet, and he's pretty annoyed about it. What do you think about it?
Well, look, I mean, I suppose team holidays, not everyone can go at certain times, you know. I know Papa Durkin was getting married and stuff this year as well, couldn't make it. I know Jim McGuinness himself didn't make it either. But I mean, you expect to be reimbursed with the same voucher that you would have got if you were going. So, I mean, if you have something on, you do something on, it's not your fault. Now, I know what Jim was saying, and in fairness, you know, he's 100% right. You know, every player after their year, you know, if you get to a semi-final or final, you tend to get a holiday at the end of the year, wherever it may be. Now, a lot of the time, the players themselves will raise a certain amount of money to go towards it. I'm sure them lads that couldn't go did as well. Now, you know, obviously the county board came out with a statement today, the Donegal County Board, saying, you know, they went the way Croke Park were saying and ticked all the boxes and so on and so forth. But
that doesn't really matter, though, to me. I mean, Gary, like, if you're looking at this from the outside in, the Donegal County Board say, look, we followed all the issues and protocols in accordance with Croke Park, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't excuse the element of fairness that Jim McGuinness is talking about, that the work that went into that campaign from everybody involved, backroom staff, players, managers, whatever, that they're entitled to go on a holiday at the end of it, and they just haven't had that.
Yeah, I think that, and the big thing from the point of view of, you know, McGuinness, he's talking about, you know, his players and his team and respect for the whole year, you know, what they put into it and, you know, what they get from it. And then they're entitled to, you know, to have their week away and their holiday, and it didn't happen. And so the respect from above is not been filtered down. And then you have anarchy in the camp, and he's out of it now. So he's in a position to have a fair comment on it, and he's dead right. And it's, you know, we were talking about this last week. I think it's crazy. And if you're talking about professionalism and stuff, getting into a situation where there's a holiday which essentially costs very little and guys aren't getting looked after.
Yeah.
And then, you know, cronyism comes into it and leads to the situation that we have now.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the holiday itself, and, you know, from your own memory, say there's 50 guys due to go. If 10 of them can't make it, what happens to those 10 spaces? Are they filled? Do other people go generally as a rule?
They may not all be filled. There'll be some filled. Yeah. Now, you know, like, it's funny, actually, just remembering back, I think it was 06, or the All-Star Tour was to Dubai, and the Mayo Tour was a cruise about, I think, a week after we came back, and I couldn't go. Now, I from what I remember, I didn't get anything for the trip. I didn't go on the Mayo trip or anything like that, a voucher, a reimburse or whatever, but there's always people on the trip that you mightn't have seen all year. There'll be one or two, you know, stragglers that tend to come in.
Yeah.
You know, there might be, you know, partners or friends or whatever it may be.
Alakadoos, basically, we call them in the rugby world.
Yeah, you just go with it. You know,
freeloaders?
Yeah.
Pretty much. You know, look, it's for the commitment nowadays, it's vastly unfair that, you know, a person that can't go doesn't get, like, there's a set amount of vouchers for the guys on the panel and someone and the backroom team, and look, the county board will get them as well, whether they should or not is another day's work, but there's a set amount there that's for them players, so they should just be given it. And that's
it. And I think Jim McGuinness was loath to write this piece in a national newspaper. I think, you know, you get the sense of, and he was criticised. I was reading some of the comments underneath. People were saying, why are you writing this in the Irish Times? Write it in a local Donegal paper. But I think, you know, for someone of his standing, who's now removed from the Donegal setup, to go to the trouble of writing this will tell us exactly how strongly he feels about it. And I think, you know, Jim McGuinness doesn't need the money. It's the principle of the point more than anything else.
Totally, and it's back to what, you know, we were talking about a couple of weeks ago about the GAA and the parochialism and the respect, you know, that needs to filter the whole way down. And there's a huge disconnect, I think, with a lot of counties and county boards and teams, and the better teams don't seem to have that, we thought. But now you have a situation, you know, because that was obviously festering in the background the whole season.
Hmm.
And he's now in a position where he's probably exhausted every avenue that he could, and he's got no choice but to, you know, out of respect to the players. Because we were talking about it during the season, about guys being at a christening and having 2 pints and not having any drink and totally, you know, expending all their energy for their county. And the least they're entitled to is something like this. And then it's disgraceful, really.
I just want to bring in John Casey, who's on the line. We're obviously to talk issues in Mayo as well. But just, John, I wanted to get your thoughts on this, if you don't mind. You know, Jim McGuinness's piece, it struck a chord, I think, for a lot of people about the unfairness of what happened. The Donegal County Board say they did nothing wrong and they've ticked all the boxes and such. But it's still, the overriding feeling for a lot of people is that, you know, they should do the right thing here.
Well, I missed an overnight trip Hugh to Bundoran with my club about 20 years ago, and I never got reimbursed for it either. So
okay, right.
I'm still holding that one, you know. But I have to say, I completely agree. Mort mentioned a case there that he was back from an All-Star trip, and the team holiday happened a week after. Probably made it impossible for him to go.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly do think that the players that aren't available to go on them trips should be financially reimbursed and said, look at here. But I thought that was happening. I'm actually shocked to hear it wasn't. I thought they were given whatever value was on the trip and said, there you go, enjoy your holiday when you can take it. So,
and I think the most shocking thing for me as well, I mean, is that someone like Jim McGuinness and Donegal, his stature, what he's done for Donegal football over the last few years, and that he has to go, you know, basically cap in hand to a county board and say, look, could he not just give the people who are owed what they're owed, and without this kind of a big battle, if you like.
Yeah, I know. He obviously feels very strongly about it. And forgive me, I haven't seen the article because we're wrapped up in our own controversy down here this at the moment. So I didn't read Jim's article, but I'm actually going to get the paper now when we finish here and have a read of it. But he obviously feels very strongly about it, and he wouldn't put it to paper if he didn't. But yeah, players need to be looked after. And I mean, and those, you know, everyone knows what county players give a setup, and if you get to latter stages of competitions and put your body on the line and the team are getting a trip, everybody should be entitled to that trip, and if they can't go, reimburse them financially.
Absolutely. 51552, by the way, let us know what you think. John, obviously we want to talk about what's going on in Mayo and the controversy you just mentioned. Can you just give us a little I suppose a wrap of what has happened over the last few weeks with the players?
Well, yeah, it's almost a year to the day, I think, Hugh, since I was on Game On with the controversy over the appointment of Noel and Pat as the management and the way that was done. So it's kind of ironic that it's exactly nearly 12 months that we're delved in more controversy. But I think it's well documented now that the players have passed a motion of no confidence on the current setup and presented that to the management, and it's kind of in turmoil down here at the moment. Everybody's looking at each other wondering what's happened, or, you know, it's 9 days after the All-Ireland final and we're in the headlines again for all the wrong reasons.
Connor, this is an unusual thing to happen, isn't it? I mean, if this isn't a run-of-the-mill stuff, you don't see too many of groups of players, you know, against the management team like this.
It's not totally unprecedented. It's happened in a couple of counties over the years. Not so much in Mayo, I think. You know, I think after defeats in particular, and you see when the way Dublin probably won the All-Ireland, I mean, there's obviously players in Mayo, you know, that think another one that got away, I think, really.
Mm.
You know, I think it tends to be a bit raw so soon after such a big game. You know, whether it's right or wrong, I mean, the players obviously know, but, you know, I think, I suppose you go back to, you know, after, I suppose, for us supporters, obviously John as well, watching on, and I mean, after the Donegal game, I mean, Pat and Noel Kennelly were, you know, probably the best thing since sliced bread when they'd already know Shea full forward and Barrymore and playing a sweeper. Mm-hmm. And then you go out in a game against Dublin, you know, and I don't think it was really a tactical thing that lost us the game, if I'm honest. I think certain players didn't perform on the day we lost the game, you know. So, you know, obviously we don't know the ins and outs of it to 100% degree, bits and pieces, obviously, but, you know, I think maybe, I think over the next few weeks when things start seeping out a little bit, you know, and as John said, I mean, look, I mean, I've got so many calls today and texts and stuff. You know, we're back. You know, I don't like to say the word laughing stock, but we're back, as John said, for the wrong reasons again. And
yeah.
It's always seems to be us at this time.
John, can we just assume, and is it fair to assume, that the players are not basing this on, you know, what happened against Dublin, either in the drawn game or in the replay where they lost, and that they actually it's a bigger issue than that? It must be just generally, you know, what's happened under the new management over the last few months.
Well, there was word on the street, Hugh, back in March and April, there was word of disharmony and discontent in the camp, which I'm assured was rectified on a training trip to Portugal. There was, as Mort mentioned there, there was certainly no word of a no-confidence issue when they hammered Sligo, blitzed Sligo in the Connacht final. No word of it. I mean, when they were tactically geniuses against Donegal with Aidan O'Shea and Barry Moore, and then after the superb comeback and when they clawed back the 7-point deficit with 10 minutes to go, there was no word of it. So It's just terrible that it raises its ugly head again after defeat. But for me, the big, like, the fact that your vote, there's a no confidence vote, there has to be a major reason why there is no confidence. Now, that hasn't been offered apparently to Nolan Patton. This is all hearsay. This has been so kept under the carpet. I mean, it hit us like a ton of bricks this morning when the news broke. So, what is the reason behind this no confidence? There has to be an explanation offered as to why they had no confidence. I mean, that reason has to be significant. In other words, that reason prevented us winning this year's All-Ireland. And we're all, look at here, we're all hurting down here. It could be, as Mort mentioned, it could be another one that got away. But look at here, we like to be harmonious. But this issue, and this, it should have been done behind closed doors, between county board, between players, if a mediator, Ban Ki-moon, Kofi Annan, you name them, get them in there, sit them down and say, right, lads, going forward, we're not far away, let's sit down, talk, iron out the points, players, what are you not happy with the boys? Boys, are you happy to change that? Sit behind closed doors, let's all be happy. Instead, it's gone wrong again and it's in bad publicity for Mayo football.
Connor, do you think the players were right to do what they did?
Well, look, at if there's a number of issues, then, you know, clearly so. Now, I think, look, you know, I think after the year, I think, you know, players, you know, have to go off in the winter as well and look at themselves as well. It's not just, as I said, and as John said, we didn't lose to Dublin because of any tactics. I mean, you go back to the Kerry All-Ireland, the Dublin All-Ireland under James Horan. Tactically, we were beaten probably on the sideline. There was no uproar then about it. And in fairness, you know, Pat Holmes, Noel Kennelly, same as James Horan, they've served Mayo well when they played. Came in as managers under, you know, as John said last year, under not good circumstances.
Yeah.
But as I said, and I said it at the time, I mean, there was a meeting 2 weeks after that when they were appointed. The clubs had their chance to have a say, didn't want to say anything about it. So, you know, I suppose it's just, as John said, you know, you don't see it publicly in other counties. I mean, surely players can sit down with management and say, we want to try and improve X, Y, and Z. And no manager is going to say, no, we're not going to do that. We're doing it our way. I mean, at the top level, you know, you have to be, you know, harmonious with each other over and back and to make decisions. And that hasn't happened. And as I said, we're all over the papers again today.
You see, John, for me, I'm looking at, you know, some of the players, some of the leaders in this Mayo team, the likes of Aidan O'Shea, you know, Keith Higgins, Lee Keegan, and these guys. And, you know, they seem very copped on guys. We've interviewed them over the course of the last couple of years on the show, and, you know, very clever guys as well. And I think they're smart enough to recognise that they can't blame everything on the management, that, you know, they have to take a certain portion of blame for what happened, particularly in the two Dublin matches. So if you take that as being true, then obviously there's issues around training, there's issues around things that we're not privy to about the management team and what's been going on for the last few months. And have you any idea about what their grievances might be?
Well, that's exactly, you know what, Hugh, I mentioned it there. There must be something major, as I said earlier on. But, you know, we have some of the best footballers in the country, and it's impressed for all the wrong reasons. Keith Higgins captained the under-21 team under the two boys in 2006. And by all accounts, the scenario that's been painted, the picture that's been painted, is that Keith Higgins and Killian O'Connor entered a room last Sunday night and presented Nolan Pat with this vote of no confidence. Now, I don't know what that meeting was like or what happened at that, but I can imagine it was very difficult for all parties. And it's just a shame that somebody hadn't sat down with the players beforehand. I don't know how, obviously the players obviously had a meeting, it's been well documented in Ballyhane this weekend of the All-Ireland, and the vote was passed, I think, on a 27-7 majority for a vote of no confidence. That's according to reports, of course. So it's an extremely difficult situation. How Noel and Pat, by all accounts, Noel and Pat are not handed in their notice, I heard today. So on Thursday night, there's a review meeting, apparently, between the county board and the players. And wouldn't I love to be a fly on the wall for that one, just to hear what kicks off. Of course, Noel's brother, Mike, being the county chairman. So it'll be very difficult circumstances for him also.
It is a very tricky situation. And as you said to me beforehand, even Conor, you know, the lads are on a three-year term as things stand. As we mentioned, you know, Noel's brother is chair of the county board, which makes it even more tricky, if you like, if that's the right word. So what happens now? Where do they go from here?
Look, it is, but you know, when you talk about players and what issues they have, and John will know this from his playing years as well, the same as myself. If you put so much in 2 or 3 years, and by putting stuff in, I mean from the outside, sponsors and putting in finance and stuff like that, you know, you do it for 4 years with no real outcome at the end of it. And I know at the start of this year, resources were a bit lower. The medical team was kind of dismantled. They had problems with physios and stuff like that. Ed Coughlin left as well, who's probably the top SNC coach in Ireland as well. So the professionalism wouldn't have been what it was under James Horan, which is understandable because finances weren't there. It's plain to see. Now, in relation to what happens now, you know, John might have a better idea in relation to if you get a three-year term, I don't know, can clubs come in now and obviously vote you? Because it's going to come down to the clubs. Like, Mike Kennelly's not going to tell Noel, we don't want you anymore. Yeah. It's not going to happen unless the lads walk away themselves. And look, they'd be within their rights not to as well. I mean, they got a three-year term. They probably thought they had an okay year in All-Ireland semi-final, probably should have won it. Had a decent league campaign, stayed in the league after 4 or 5 games, they were safe. You know, it's just so awkward what's going to happen. But I mean, if the clubs have a say, and I said it going back 2 weeks after they were appointed, they had their chance to say something then and they didn't. So whether they'll say it now or not is another thing.
The biggest issue for me, John, is how strongly the players feel about this. I mean, they've obviously feeling strongly enough to get the motion of no confidence together and actually present it to the management team. The next question is, what are they prepared to do in terms of actions if they're not being listened to?
Well, I think the last scenario we had like this was probably 1992, I think, when there was a bit of a player revolt under the current management. And the following year, I think, 93, we went out and suffered a 20-point drubbing at the hands of Cork in a semi-final. So I'm not going to say then that drasticness is going to happen. But certainly, I think somebody needs, if the management aren't prepared to go, I mean, I don't know how the lads, Pat and Noel, they'd be two good friends of mine, two former teammates. I don't know how they'd be able to go into a dressing room again with a bunch of, we'd say, 27, and probably the dominant members of that would have been the ones that would have voted the no confidence. How they could go into a dressing room with them again if they decide not to go and they want to stay on as men, somebody is drastically going to have to do something, sit down and get something sorted out quick. I mean, I'm sure both parties are willing to listen. It's all for the benefit of Mayo football at the end of the day, and it's not the place we want to be. We're licking our wounds. It's not so long ago since we played Dublin, almost beat them, and we're licking our wounds, and it's kind of rash now that, and it's just bad publicity at a bad time. I only wish it was done behind closed doors, Hugh.
Here's a text, John, that I just want to put to you. Everybody here in Mayo knows that James Horan will be back. It's time outside agencies stop trying to run Mayo football. What does that mean? Do you know?
If what, Hugh?
It's time that outside agencies stopped trying to run Mayo football. What outside agencies would this texter be talking about? I have no idea.
More than any idea?
Do you have any idea, Conor?
Sky Sports, maybe.
Yeah, I have no idea really what he means. Send him back a text and ask him to explain himself.
Tell him to ring in.
Yeah, I'll do. 51552 text if you'd like to explain exactly what you mean. We're all ears here. Look, it's a strange one. I suppose we have to wait and see, Conor, what happens next, because we just don't know. You know, obviously, this is the time of the season, or the season's over, so there's going to be a quiet few weeks. But we're already hearing from even Jim McGuinness's piece today, this is the time that counties are preparing for the next season already.
Dublin, after last year's All-Ireland losing, met a week after and they started their plan straight away. We'll probably be 4 or 5 weeks now not knowing who's going to be the manager, what's going to happen with players, and club championship will be running on. you know, and I just can't understand, and I've seen it all today, a lot of bits in, on, you know, texts and tweets and stuff about James Horan coming back and stuff like this as well. You know, I don't think that's the way forward for us. I think they had their, he had his 4 years with his team. You know, Buckley was the coach, as he was with Pat Holmes and Noel Kennelly. That the whole coach and stuff won't change. You know, I think they need to look at someone, you know, if there's a change, to look for someone with obviously fresh ideas. And Stephen Rocher's name was mentioned a few times, going back to under 21. Should have got it then, didn't get it for reasons known, but not for...
Yeah, well, listen, John, in terms of, I just want to use, I mean, you know, to follow someone like James Horan, who obviously had such respect from the players, and he did a fantastic job, albeit just not getting over that final hurdle. But everybody knows how well-liked and respected James Horan was. You know, Leinster had a situation where Joe Schmidt left, and Matt Williams, who came out, not Matt Williams, I should say, jeez, I'm actually losing the plot, Matt O'Connor, who came after him, obviously didn't go well for him. Is this just a case of that some of those players who spent 4 years under Horan are having to get used to new structures, and maybe they're just not too comfortable by what the changes have been brought in?
I 100%, Hugh, I completely agree with that. I mean, Jay, I'm not saying that Pat and Noel wouldn't have been as professional, but I know James Horan, at a huge expense, left no stone unturned for Mayo football, and credit to him for that. He nearly got us to the promised land, didn't. The boys would have been under pressure. They would have had to do an awful lot of learning, Hugh, from their time. I mean, 2006... and both of them managing club at club level, but managing a county team like Mayo is a far cry from managing any club. James had the biggest and most professional setup ever seen at Mayo level, and the lads would have, you know, the two boys were probably, you know, we heard about psychologists and nutritionists. I'd say Pat Holmes and Noel Kennelly are more fellas that wear their heart on their sleeves and get out there and do it for your jersey and go through that wall for Mayo football. And for that reason, I think the players mightn't have been used to their style, and therefore some of them might have been a little bit scuppered by it, and therefore there's where the disharmony might have started. They were going, well, why haven't I been meeting with whoever telling me I'm great or type of thing? I don't know. It's just look at, somebody needs to iron out the issues quickly, but I think it was just a bit short now that the Noel and Pat got 3 years, and this was year one. Everyone makes mistakes in the first year they're doing anything, so...
Okay. Well, look, it's something we're going to talk about. I mean, look, just to leave it on this point, I mean, it's, for me, it's perfectly understandable if, you know, Mayo players are probably looking at Dublin and looking at how well facilitated they are with the latest nutritionist, sports science, and you know, all the disposable income that's available to get the best out of that squad. And if they don't feel that they are at least matching Dublin in terms of that knowledge and input, Connor, then maybe it's understandable that they feel frustrated.
No, look at it, absolutely. Don't get me wrong. It's 100% understandable. But, you know, from all the years that we never wanted for anything really on any Mayo panel. That's going back, you know, even John's time before mine, my time through. We never wanted for anything. And any of the Mayo players in that panel today, if they want something, they'll get it. It's not out of reach to get stuff. You know, as I said, finances are a lot lesser and stuff now like that. And in fairness, on what I said earlier on, I mean, it's not just management, players, county board. They all have to, in the winter, have a good look at themselves. We had a lot of our bigger players this year that didn't perform when it mattered pretty much in the Dublin game, in the two Dublin games. Hence, that's who needs to look at each other and try and resolve something together as we go forward.
Gary?
Well, I just think that, you know, this might be showing a little bit why Mayo haven't got through those tough games or won the All-Irelands. You know, if you have a situation where you have an anarchy with player power because we don't have this or don't have that, you know, it's... My dad had a great expression that an ounce of guts is worth a ton of shit.
Yeah.
You know, and it's kind of true. Yeah. You know, if there are stuff... Like, Mayo basically are under this incredible amount of pressure to get over the line to win an All-Ireland. And you can say management do this and do that. But players have to get together and realise that, you know, they do the business on the pitch. Yeah. Management can only do so much. And if you have a situation where they haven't done it and now they're trying to create this little anarchy, they don't have the margin for that. They've lost to the All-Ireland champions the last 2 years in replays, so the margins are tiny. But they have to create that little difference amongst themselves and not start wimping around about this and about that.
John?
Yeah, I completely agree. You know what, it's easy. You know, but it's a classic case of the tail wagging the dog here. I mean, player power. Players, of course, are entitled to their opinions. I agree completely. But they should not be ruling the roost. They should not. Lunatics should not rule the asylum. It's as simple as that. There's a hierarchy there for doing that. Yes, let them voice their opinion, but don't let them call the shots ultimately at the end of the day.
John, it's been a pleasure talking to you as always. Thanks a million.
No problem, Hugh. Thank
Cheers.
You. Cheers, guys.
And you're very welcome back. 51552 is our text number, of course, for continuing our build up to Ireland against Italy at the Rugby World Cup on Sunday. Massive game for both teams. And I'm delighted to say we have former Italy international Paul Griffin on the show. Hiya, Paul.
Thank you, yourself.
Listen, not too bad. Thanks so much for talking to us. Look, what's the mood like in Italy this week ahead of the game against Ireland? Is there a sense of excitement building? Is there an expectation that, you know, Italy have a good chance of winning the game?
There's always excitement when you play an international game, you know, especially, I mean, although it wasn't pretty the other day against Canada, everyone is still, you know, they believe now our World Cup has started and there's a possibility, you know, of creating a little bit of history here too. Obviously, if we can pick up a win against Ireland, then you go into the last game with a chance of you know, going through to the playoff round as well. So there is an air of excitement, but also of, I could say, danger as well, you know, where we could possibly go out there, and if we play like we've been playing lately, you know, it could end up being an embarrassment.
Because I have watched the last couple of games and the match against France, and as I said, Canada ran them pretty close, and just seems like Italy are a little bit flat at the moment.
Very flat, very, very flat. I mean, you know, the strong point for Italian rugby, for our rugby, is, you know, our set phase, and at the moment, scrum-wise, we're really, really struggling with the interpretation with the referee, and you know, a lot of our ball for scrums, you know, it's collapsing and we've been penalised. So we've got to try and understand why that's happening and try to system to get that right as well. And then line out wise, you know, especially against Canada, you know, Canada didn't contest, they didn't try and didn't put a challenge against us when we're trying to drive, and we just didn't have a plan B. So that took away a lot of our firepower, and you know, we're very flat at the moment. We're just a little bit imprecise as well, you know, one-on-one tackles against Canada. We missed 31 tackles, which, you know, we made 90 and missed 31. So when you're missing 25% of your defensive efforts as well, you know, you can't you know, keep yourself in the game. But they're lucky enough against Canada that they were allowed, I suppose, to get a couple of penalties and kick a couple of goals, which got them over the finish line.
And I suppose, you know, maybe it's easy to say this still, but I think it still rings true. Sergio Parise, so much depends on him being fit. I just hearing from Robbie there that he's got to go through two more fitness tests before he's cleared to play against Ireland, which doesn't sound great. But I mean, you know, Italy without Parise are still, you know, they're just a weak in force.
Oh, mate, I agree with you 100%. I mean, Sergio is, you know, such a massive asset or a massive player for the Italian side and for world rugby in itself, you know. But without him, the boys, I think, more of a mental thing rather than anything. You know, they really, really struggle to get themselves up, because Sergio provides so much of an inspiration, the way he plays, which is in the way he leads the side as well. So his fitness, obviously leading up to Sunday, is going to be very, very important. If he can be on the field, I'm sure the boys can lift a hell of a lot and hopefully give the Irish side a good challenge. And, you know, I'm hoping for us that they can come out on the right side of the ledger.
I'm looking through the squad here, Paul, and this is something that we were talking about earlier today in terms of the personnel that Italy are still so reliant on, and Parise is one of them. And then you look at guys like Castro Giovanni still around, Mauro Bergamasco still playing, Bortolami's only just retired, then you've got Luke McLean, Giraldini, who you mentioned, and the guys that have been around for a long, long time, and a lot of the guys who you would have played with as well, even when you retired in 2009. And I'm just wondering, how do the Italian rugby fans feel about this, that there doesn't seem to be a lot of talent coming through?
Yeah, no, that is true. I mean, there's a lot of guys that are knocking on the door, but unfortunately the mentality in Italy as well is that, you know, if you're too young, they don't give you a chance. You know, like, basically they're happy to hang on to the older statesmen, I suppose you could say, like the guys that you mentioned, and rather than giving a young guy a chance and trying to work him into it. Obviously a World Cup is different as well, because you've got goals and you've got objectives to try and achieve, but you know, there is talent in Italy. It's just a matter of the belief, I suppose you could say, on behalf of the Rugby Federation, or Rugby Union, to give these guys a chance, the coaching staff, to give these guys a chance to try and come through. Because, you know, guys, I mean, Castro is someone that I really, really, really admire. He's a good friend of mine as well. But at the moment, he's really, really struggling with his form and what's going on the field. So, you know, there are guys that could come in and maybe have a crack as well. But it's all up to, obviously, if it was my choice, you know, I'd give a young guy a crack. But unfortunately, you know, or fortunately, the coach has got those decisions and he lives with those, and he lives and dies by the sword. So it's his call.
And why do you think there is, kind of a reluctance to bring the younger guys through. Why do you think that attitude exists at the moment? Is it just a general thing?
I think it's just been a telling mentality about it all. You know, they're just a lot of things that are here. You know, there are, like I was saying, there are a lot of guys coming through. I'm working at the moment with an Italian academy, and there's a lot of my guys that are 16, 17 years old. Obviously, they've still got to grow.
Mm-hmm.
But they are showing a lot of promise, you know, and I'm hoping in 3-4 years' time they could play for the national team. But at 20, 21 years old, they're almost seen as being too young, and they're not prepared, they're not ready to go, so they don't get that chance. And, you know, in those years, especially when you're at that age there and you're, you know, you're full of excitement and energy and you want to give your best, you know, that gets delayed by 2 or 3 years. And by the time I get to 23, 24, you know, that flame, I suppose, just has been extinguished a little bit too, and they just don't get a chance to give their 100 and demonstrate exactly what they can give.
And that's pretty sad. I mean, looking at someone like Jacques Brunel, and he's obviously leaving after the World Cup. I mean, it doesn't look like, and without being disrespectful to him, it doesn't look like he's leaving the national team in a very healthy state. And I wonder, you know, did he sacrifice bringing guys through to serve his own means, which was trying to get the best results he could, but not necessarily that's the best thing for the squad, if you like?
Yeah, it can be looked at upon that as well. You know, obviously, Jack's hands have been tied a little bit as well, you know, with the way, like you're saying, about the older statesmen still being there. And it's hard for him as well. I mean, I think he probably knows too that they're not performing and they're not doing to the best of what they can. You know, we know, you know, guys like Castro, Ghirardini, like the guys that you said as well, you know, Mauro Bergamasco, you know, they do, when they're playing well, they really do make a difference. But at this stage, you know, in time too, you know, they're not performing as we know that they can perform, and you know, it kind of, it reflects back a bit on Jack, but obviously the players have got to stand up and take their responsibility as well. You know, I mean, I don't want to, you know, hurt players that I play with, good friends of mine as well, but you know, if the players don't stand up, then obviously the coach is always the one that wears it. And unfortunately for Jack, it's kind of looking that way at the moment. You know, when he leaves, he's going to leave leave as a coach that kind of never really took the next step after Nick Mullett.
And it's a strange one as well, because he does seem like quite a strong personality, and then I wonder how much he was tied, as you say. I mean, it's in terms of attracting a top class coach in to succeed him, you know, the Italian Rugby Federation actually might find it quite difficult if that's going to be their policy. And if you're coming into a situation where, you know, you're basically going to lose half your squad through just old age and retirements over the next 2 to 3 years, it's not a very enticing proposition.
No, it's not. And unfortunately, you know, with the two franchises that are going through in the Pro 12, you know, it just, we're producing, the players are playing week in and week out at a higher level. We're not producing results there as well. So when you get into that situation, I suppose, too, when you're not winning week in and week out, you know, as Munster, Leinster, you know, and Ulster do, then it becomes more of a mental thing as well, you know, rather than a actual preparation thing in rugby-wise. So it becomes a lot harder too. And I think that kind of flows across as well to the national side. You know, a lot of times, and it sounds really bad, but a lot of times it's a lot of things about damage control rather than actually going out and challenging and trying to create something to, you know, to win the game.
And you'd hate to see Italy take a backward step. I mean, anyone who's been lucky to be at the Stadio Flaminio or the Olimpico over the last few years and been to a Six Nations game or in Italy, the atmosphere is always incredible. And actually, it's my favourite country to go to watch a rugby match, because the fans make it just an amazing experience. And it seems like there are the raw materials there in terms of that support base that they have and the Italians' passion, I suppose, just for sport. But they have to have something to get excited about and something that they can be proud of. And if it takes a backward step, it could be a long time before Italy get back to, I suppose, the levels that they had been, or say 4 or 5 years ago.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you 100%. You know, I mean, I was lucky enough to, you know, to put on the Azzurri jersey for a couple of years and run around and do a few bits and bobs. But you know, I love it, and I do love it. You know, to say what I've said, you know, previously in the last 3 or 4 minutes, it does hurt me as well. But you know, to be honest about it, I think that's the big thing we need to be. We need to be honest about where we are, what we're doing, and how we're going about it, and maybe relook at ourselves and try to rediscover our identity as well as an Italian rugby team or a rugby country as well, because the support is fantastic. Like you said, you know, you come to Italy and there are people everywhere all dressed up and ready to go and very, very excited, you know, and we're not getting results. Obviously, they feel it as well and they hurt, and then that filters back through to the team, and, you know, you feel like you're disappointing also your public, which is a horrible thing to think and a horrible thing to be happening. But you know, unfortunately, that's just the way the world rolls with sport.
Yeah. So I take it you'll be an interested spectator this weekend. Are you going to the match, or are you going to watch it from home?
Mate, I've got my couches booked with my youngest son for 2.5 hours, so I'll be lying on there having a quiet beer and watching it, and not that I want to tell you, but I'll be quietly cheering for a Italy upset so that they can carry on with their quest in this World Cup.
Absolutely. Look, it's been a pleasure to talk to you, and thanks so much for your time, Paul. Appreciate it.
Mate, thanks very much.
Cheers. Paul Griffin there, former Italy international, 42 caps for his country, brilliant player. Went to see him loads of times when he was playing, just a really decent guy. Gave everything for the Italian cause. New Zealand originally, obviously, as you can hear by the accent there, but it's just, you'd worry for Italy and rugby the way things are going at the moment.
Yeah, I think so, and we should probably, you know, win comfortably the weekend.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, they're saying, like, you know, the first two games are this and that, and Italy's a big test. But, you know, as you say, Italy are pretty weak at the moment.
Yeah, they're dying a bit. Yeah. They competed, was it 2 years ago? They competed in a few games, pretty all right.
Yeah, I mean,
they're hard enough beat over there.
Yeah, they had developed that reputation. But they're just so reliant on those older guard, if you
names.
Like. Yeah. It's something we're going to talk about later on during the week as well, continuing our build-up. We've got Ronan O'Gara and Bernard Jackman on Thursday night still to come. I want to move on, though, because time is against us and Mark Langdon is standing by. Before we get to Mark, have a listen to Paul McGrath, who was asked on the decision, about the decision of Jack Grealish to choose England over the Republic of Ireland. This is what he had to say.
Well, to be honest, I think Jack's a very young man. You know, he's got some... it was a huge decision he's got to make, but... I would have opted for Ireland if I was him, because I think his chances of getting a regular spot with the England team would be a little more limited than with the Irish team. And we could do with him at the moment as well. They'll play him a couple of games or something like that, and then, you know, he finds he's kind of shut out a little bit. And I think Jack, talented player though he is, I still think at the age that he is, he's still got a lot to prove. He's been playing really well for Aston Villa, but we've not been winning games. But he has shown that he's got great ability and stuff like that. But he's still got a lot to prove, so it's a dodgy move. He'd have got more regular international football, I think, with Ireland, and it would have been great if he selected us. I think deep down he probably does feel more English, but he's already played for Ireland underage, and I think that kind of puts into question, you know, what were the reasons for picking England? I don't think it could be money or anything like that to get paid well enough anyway, but I don't think money would have been an issue, and it shouldn't be an issue when you're talking about your country anyway. But purely from a point of view of wanting to play international football and having the heritage, both Irish and English, I would have thought if you want to play 50 games for your country, then Ireland would have been the more natural choice for me anyway, because England it's going to be much more competitive because of the pool of players that they have to pick from. You know, he could have been the top man. He could have been the top player for Ireland for a number of years. But again, I think he's only a young kid, so, and he's every right to choose who he wants to play for. It's just that we could have done with him.
Okay, that's Paul McGrath on Jack Grealish. This is the last night we're going to talk about this, by the way, because he's made a decision. But I just wanted to get Mark Langdon's thoughts, football editor with the Racing Post. Hiya, Mark.
Hi, are you okay?
Well, are you very excited about the prospect of Jack Grealish lining out in an England jersey, or do you care either way?
I'm not. I don't really care either way, I suppose. I mean, I think what Paul McGrath said there about he would have more opportunities up for Ireland, I don't think that should come in to somebody's decision making. Really, it should come down to, if you've got the choice, you know, do you feel more English or do you feel Irish? You know, obviously he's decided, I think, being born in England, that he feels that, you know, he should represent England. But I mean, just to put this into context, the likelihood of him sort of breaking into the England squad, I've had some bookmakers sort of sending me over some prices. He's 10-1 to be in England's Euro 2016 squad. So I think it's going to be some time before Grealish sort of makes an impact for the senior team in sort of, you know, forcing his way into Roy Hodgson's plans.
Absolutely. I think he'd be very aware of that, you know, the easy option if he wants to play international football was to declare for Ireland, because he would have been straight in almost. But, you know, he's taking his chances with England, and he's born there and he feels English. That's, you know, fair enough. And that is the Jack Grealish story closed forever, I promise you. Listen, in terms of Arsenal tonight, then, Champions League at home against Olympiacos, they kind of have to win this one, don't they?
Oh, I think that they really do, Hugh, because you know that they dropped some real silly points last time out in the Champions League against Dynamo Zagreb. I don't think many people expected them to do that. I mean, they should bounce back against Olympiakos. Olympiakos are the top dogs in Greece. That doesn't really mean much. Adai Brown, who flopped at West Brom, he's up front for them. They've got Cambiasso in midfield, who did well for Leicester last season. But you know, I think really in Champions League terms that they're pretty limited, and this is a good opportunity for Arsenal to get 3 points on the board.
Yeah, and just what's happening with Chelsea at the moment, Mark? Their domestic form just really continues to just bump along, really average to poor, if we're being honest about it. Can you put your finger on why this is?
I can't really, because it's all about the defence, isn't it? I mean, they keep on conceding 2+ goals in a game, apart from when they played Arsenal, who had 10 men. So, I mean, defensively, they've been all over the place. I mean, a couple of surprises in the team selection tonight. We know Hazard and Matic is also dropped. So I think that Mourinho finally deciding he's had enough, really, and he's calling out some of his big-name players, those that have not delivered for him this season, who were so influential last season. I tend to think with these things that sooner rather than later, Chelsea will get back to, you know, to being the team that they were. But I think maybe it's because, you know, teams have now seen you don't have to be scared of Chelsea. You can attack them, and if you attack them, you can score goals. And last season, I mean, maybe too many teams took a backward step against them, and now we're seeing teams being more aggressive, and they're getting their just rewards.
Yeah, interesting that Hazard has been dropped. Maybe it's a real statement of intent by Mourinho in terms of, you know, no one is undroppable. Do you think that Chelsea and Arsenal will win tonight?
Oh, I think Chelsea have got a very difficult game. I think Mourinho, with his team selection, would probably take a point. I mean, Porto are very strong at home, and even though you know, they lost a couple of players in the summer, Jackson Martinez, their top scorer, and the two fullbacks went to Real Madrid and Juventus, Alexandro and Danilo, they always invest smartly, and I think in Abubakar up front and Brahimi playing just off of him, Porto probably feel like they've got enough to get at least a draw out of the game. I think it's one of them where both teams have probably take a draw now and, you know, move on to the next game, really, because they'll fancy their chances of qualifying.
OK, well, all games have kicked off, and I know you want to go and watch them, and we just got we had a bit of a Mayo breaking news story here, so that's why we got carried away. But next week, we might just talk to you about Valencia and what's going on there, because an interesting piece I read today. Mark, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Super stuff, Mark Langdon there. Games have all kicked off. No scores so far in any of them in the Champions League tonight. We'll keep you posted. OK, just a couple of texts before we get to a break. The Dubs will get 2 holidays, says Harry and Loudis, in relation to Jim McGuinness's piece. Tell the lads to have a look at the Wicklow setup. They are recent under-21B hurling winners for the first time, and more county board officials and their friends sat down for a meal than the players. The same county chairman who said that hurling would never be played in his club field. That is what is going on, and it's not good enough, says Phil from Wicklow. Kevin McStay should manage Mayo and give the Rossies one day a week, says Des in Castlebar. Well, of course, he's pretty close to being ratify there, or if he has already, I need to double check that one. But yeah, that's interesting. Alfie in Dublin says, lads, be careful with your use of the word entitled. There is no entitlement. They may and do deserve recognition for their efforts and holidays, etc., but this should be done on a voluntary basis. Well, I think it is on a voluntary basis, but I think the entitlement comes from the fact that they have given their services over the course of a season, worked bloody hard to do that. Yeah. And if there's a holiday for every member of the squad, backroom and players, and some of those don't get it because of circumstances beyond their control, i.e. work commitments, whatever, then they are entitled to it.
Yeah, plus the big thing is that it's a team bonding exercise as well.
Exactly.
As much as anything else.
The problem here, lads, is the process that landed Pat Holmes and Noel Kennelly into this job was completely flawed, and now the chickens are coming home to roost. The county board are the root of the problem, and until the people of Mayo clubs step up and initiate change, we always fall short. Wake up, people of Mayo, from a former player.
It's a fact. I have to agree. I've said it for quite a number of years now. It's not everybody in the county board, but there is people there way too long now, and I said it last year when I had my book out last year, the bit about the county board was taken out of it. It wasn't effing and blinding, it was just
that was the lawyers deciding to just protect
different look results. Some of them are there too long, and it's literally stopping Mayo football progressing. That's what it's doing.
Read the Mayo Asylum quote. What if the county board are the lunatics? Dinosaurs, hence the same old tactics players can't listen to anymore. And Mayo need to look outside the county to the likes of Jack O'Connor. The manager needs full backing from the county board and to give full say and money for 2 years. Then Mayo will win in all our Ireland, says John from Kerry. 51552 at Game On 2FM with a quick break.
How much money?
We're back with golf after these.
Good question.
Jordan Spieth is a very wealthy man.
Yeah, you want a few quid and something.
Just the $11 million. That all?
He won more money on, he won $2 million more on Sunday than Jack Nicklaus won in his career.
Wow. That is depressing and disgusting in equal measure.
Yeah.
It's brutal. That's absolutely crazy. What, I mean, is get your head around that for a second.
Yeah, it's not right, is it?
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
But he's some boy.
He is, though, isn't he?
Yeah, he certainly is. I think...
Why do people struggle to appreciate what they're seeing with this guy? We had a conversation yesterday, you know, about just the fact that not, you know, people get bored by him. But like,
I think it's I think it's kind of manufacturing companies, probably TV. You know, you go to see a guy at a tournament, and it's the guy that booms it, you know, out of the park type of thing. He's not that type of player. He'll never be that type of player. But if you have, he's Jeff Ogilvy. The term he used was the best. His golfing IQ is so far ahead of anyone else. It's frightening.
How important is golfing IQ? Just
It's the whole thing.
It's everything.
It's everything.
This is the reason why you tell me, you see these guys every year, amateurs, booming and bombing it, unbelievable, top of their game. They turn to the professional and they just cannot get the ball around the golf course.
Well, yeah, because it's, I mean, there's a great piece and it's worth looking at with Jason Day. His kind of journey to get to where he is. And Speed said it the other day, like when he's off tour, he hits 1,000 putts a day, 1,000 bunker shots, and then does his other stuff. Now we have, you know, five potential guys turning pro this year, or I've heard some of them have, hugely talented. I mean, they all have a great chance of making a living from the game. But the fact is, if you can do the time, you have to do the time. It's a very lonely existence being a professional golfer. You have to spend off tour, you know, 6 to 8 hours on your own every day, working at your craft the whole time. Spieth has had outrageous success. You have to remember, he turned pro in 2013. He had no category to play anywhere. He went to tour school and didn't get through. And people have to remember that. You know, we have a lot of talented young players going to tour school this year. If it doesn't work out for them, which it won't for all of them, it's by no means the end of the road. They're building their career. They're starting off again. But the work ethic has to be there. His desire to get better is astonishing. Like, his stats this year are just off the charts.
Yeah.
He's beaten, you know, it's something to learn from amateur golfers. Like, Stenson was hitting a 3-wood outside his driver all day long on Sunday. And yet, when he held that putt on 11, Stenson looked at him like, you know, how do I get past you? He has this mentality and desire to just get it done. And he's fantastic. And the frightening thing is, he's only 22 years of age.
That's it, and you know.
Yeah, but you can't buy that, you know.
And it can't last forever, as we know. Just can't.
We don't know. Why not? Well, you know, it lasted for Tiger for what, 13 years.
Yeah.
Now his stuff.
We're like, never going to see that again, though, are we?
Well, his stuff is at the moment is better than Tiger's stuff. The numbers he's had this year, what he's done this year, Tiger didn't do that.
Give
like
us
it's
your
1929, the last time someone's done Tommy Horton, 1929. So he's, you know, he nearly did Ben Hogan's record this year, broke Tiger's. He's done some scary stuff, but he doesn't have that celebrity glamour about him, and that's why the hype isn't as crazy as it possible.
That actually makes me like him even more, I have to say.
Yeah.
Give us your bets for this weekend. The Alfred Dunhill's coming up.
Yeah, fantastic event. Favourites are Kymer, Lowry, Donald, Eddie Pepperell. But I think Michael Hoey's 8-1 to be leading Irish player. It's
okay.
Good bet. Andrew Doat's 11-1 to be leading Australian. And Levy is 6-1 to be leading French player. And Cameron Smith playing in Taiwan this week. He's 6-1. I think he's good value.
Okay. Treble them up. And we'll see you in Vegas. Thanks, Gary. Thanks, Connor.